This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Welcome to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Marcellus Wiley here, B+. But Acho, we not cool right now. Because right before the show, you gonna tell me I got some fingerprints on my tie bar right before we go live.
I'm trying to help you out. Whatever, I didn't know you couldn't react fast enough. See what I'm saying? Who said the post office had issues this year? Obviously, your mail came through. Let's start with the Rockets right now, whose backs are against the wall in the must-win Game 7 tonight against the Thunder. Ooh. James Harden and Russell Westbrook had huge turnovers in Game 6 to help OKC tie up the series. Rockets stars don't fare very well in elimination games. Harden, 8-10 in his career. Westbrook, only 4-8. So Acho with the dirty tie bar. Whose legacy is more on the line tonight? Harden, Westbrook.
Marcellus, this is one of the easiest questions you've ever asked me since I've been on the show. Of course, it's easily James Harden. Think about this, and I had to think about this myself. Y'all think about this at home.
You got to think about something easy.
Sometimes, okay? When you think about Shaquille O'Neal, played for several teams, but Shaquille O'Neal's a Los Angeles Laker. Allen Iverson played for a few teams, but Allen Iverson, he's a 76er.
Yes.
When you go through the line and you say Tony Parker, he played for a couple teams, but Tony Parker, he is a Spur. Mm. James Harden, he is a Rocket. Mm. Russell Westbrook, though he's on the Rockets, Russell, when you think about his legacy, you're going to say, you know what?
I like this.
Westbrook played for the Thunder. Mm. He might have had a stint, a little speed bump, but he played for the Thunder. If the Rockets lose Game 7, it falls on the back of James Harden because James Harden is forever a Rocket. To whom much is given, much is required. Mm. Harden has been given the wheels of this team. You think of Paul George. Yeah, he had a brief 2 years with the Thunder, but you're never going to say, oh, yeah, man, PG. Yeah, he played. No, that's not what you're going to say, because that's not where his legacy lies. James Harden's legacy lies with this Rockets team. And so the success of the Rockets, it goes to James Harden. The failures of the Rockets, it falls on James Harden. Think about it. James Harden, he's played in 13 playoff series with the Rockets, but he's lost 8 of them. Lost more playoff series than he has won with this team. So when I think about James Harden, he already has a few too many notches on his belt. But Marcellus, let's dive a little deeper because that's what we do on this show.
Layers.
The layers. James Harden, one of the best scorers of this generation. That's what we say when we talk about Harden. But you don't play. It's not the game of scorers. It's the game of basketball. And so I don't care about what James Harden has done as far as scoring. What has he done as far as winning?
Impact.
So again, his impact just hasn't been large enough. So again, if they lose this one, to me, it's going to fall more on the legacy of James Harden.
Mm. You said the word legacy. And as humans do, they want to take something and make it their own, showing their God complex and not purely defining what legacy is, which is a gift that especially is money or personal property. It's supposed to be a thing. But you know what it's turned into? Just reputation. Legacy has now morphed its way into reputation. What others think of you. So now we're going to get into a conversation. What do we think of Harden or what do we think of Westbrook if things don't go well tonight? You know damn well the more polarizing of these two is Russell Westbrook. The one that they're going to condemn the most is Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook has been condemned before. He had his grace period after Durant dipped on him and everyone was saying, oh, you're a sympathetic figure, Russell Westbrook. And then he started going out there every single night, every single year, getting triple doubles. Mm-hmm. And you know what they did immediately? Oh, triple-doubles are kind of easy to get now. They minimize the triple-double just because of how polarizing Russell Westbrook is. But when you look at James Harden, he's sitting there in Houston, and we know maybe the most lethal scorer we've seen in the NBA, certainly top five ever, in terms of ball in hand, ball in bucket, mm-hmm. James Harden. And all he did was say, I need some help. And then they said, okay, we're going to send you a lifeline. And they sent them a lifeline, a CP3. And he had the inopportune injury to his hamstring at a time when they were really going to do something, maybe even advance past Golden State. So then they ship CP3 out of town because they say, oh, man, you're 35, you're older, and you're injured at the wrong times. So let's bring in another lifeline, Russell Westbrook, who's younger and durable. And then what does Russell Westbrook do at the worst time ever? Get injured and then comes back and looks a mess, playing poorly, not playing bad, playing poorly. So when this all goes down the line, the way that you're supposed to define it is by actual production. By playoff numbers, Harden is having his best playoff series ever. But we're not going to respect that if we listen to Acho. You have to listen to the numbers, and the numbers say it's going to be on Westbrook.
The problem I have with your argument, Marcellus, is the numbers, these numbers you're talking about, they're meaningless. Let me tell you why.
Great.
I'm glad you asked how, because I had to ask myself the same question. The last time, Marcellus, that a NBA scoring champion, so the person who led the league in scoring that year, won a title, 1999 Shaquille O'Neal.
Okay.
So what does that mean? What does that mean to you, the viewer? What does that mean to me? What did that mean to Daryl Morey? What should that mean to the Rockets? What should that should mean is, even if James Harden does what we love in this world, selfish gratification, oh my God, he filled up the box score. James Harden, did you see he dropped 50? Oh my God, he's averaging 37 over the last five games. What that means is that has no indication on success for the team. In fact, being a scoring champion is an indicator that you're not going to win the ship in recent history. Marcellus, what I'm saying is James Harden's legacy is going to be it's going to have such a negative implication if he doesn't win this one again. One of my favorite players early 2000s, Tracy McGrady, baby.
Okay.
T-Mac.
The Mac.
I had his shoes, man. I had the T-Macs, them all black joints. He was Adidas. He had them three stripes. I rock with him. Okay. I was a kid at the time. Sure. You know me. I had his shoes. But T-Mac, when you think about him, what did he ever accomplish? He had two scoring titles. James Harden, he's going on his third scoring title.
Uh-huh.
T-Mac. Never got out of the first round. Uh-huh. Yeah, he was one of the greatest scorers of the early 2000s, one of the greatest scorers of the last 20 years. But when we think about T-Mac, we don't really think about T-Mac now, do we?
Oh,
we don't.
We don't? I think about the Hall of Famer. I don't know about you.
But let me ask you this, Marcellus.
Yeah.
It's very simple. How many scoring titles does Jordan have? You got to think about it, right? He has 10. But how many chips does Jordan have? He has 6, because that is his legacy. So if the Rockets lose, Harden's legacy will be nothing but a bunch of scoring titles that nobody will remember.
Great to give me simple numbers, and great to take the conversation from two guys. Neither one has a championship ring, right? So now we're going to level the playing field, and which one is going to take the brunt of all this criticism? It's going to be obviously Russell Westbrook. But let's bring in somebody to settle this tie in Slick Rick DeBuecher. Whose legacy is more on the line, Slick Rick, Harden or Westbrook?
I initially thought that this was a great question because it was so debatable between the two. And then I thought about it a little bit more and I thought, you know what? It's not a very good question because it's very apparent that it's James Harden that has the legacy on the line here. Yes. Because it is essentially, Marcellus, you are accusing Russell Westbrook of throwing a terrible party when he didn't make the invitation list. And in order to be able to, look, they didn't just trade for Westbrook. Harden wanted that trade. He wanted Chris Paul out. They did not get along. And he thought, you know, my old running buddy in Oklahoma City, he would be a better fit. We're going to get this done. Acho is right in saying that this is Harden's party. Houston is his team. This is his show, but it goes a little bit farther than that because of the type of show it is. Yes, 3-time scoring champ running. Last 3 scoring titles are his. But he's done it, and he's done it in a way with Mike D'Antoni, whose legacy is also on the line here, in a way that we've all said, is that really going to work? Can you really win a championship playing that kind of ball-dominant ISO ball? And James Harden, time and time again, has said, yes, watch me do it. And time again, we get to the postseason. He has a great regular season, wins another scoring title, is an all-star again. And then we get to the playoffs, and we get deeper in the playoffs, and we get deeper into a series, and suddenly James Harden can't deliver the goods in the fourth quarter when it matters most. So the idea that James Harden can win the way James Harden has made himself a star is on the line. And right now we're seeing it fail. And if he doesn't get out of this round, if the Rockets don't get out of this round, it is going to be squarely on James Harden and the system that he says can get it done.
Man, all I heard was that James Harden's a bad GM, and that's speculation at most. Look, he doesn't pull the strings. He suggests strongly what he desires, but there still is a Daryl Morey, if he still exists at the China. He's still out there, and he's the one that supposed to make these moves. Look, James Harden is shooting 64% in his true shooting percentage right now. 29.7 PER, because y'all want to give me simple numbers, and I'm going to give you complex numbers to show how great he's performing. But let's break this down why Westbrook is going to take the L in this situation. One, Westbrook has already played with Kevin Durant and James Harden before. How that turn out? And then Durant dips, and not only dips, but goes and wins. So then that falls squarely on Westbrook. Like, how come y'all couldn't win if he could go somewhere else and win? I'm not saying if it's right. I'm just saying what's going to occur. And then now he goes back to his old running mate, say, oh, KD left me, Harden, but I'm going to come to you. And he comes to Houston. And they're looking good this year, not tremendous this year. You're looking at a 4 seed. And then all of a sudden, when they need him most, and they ship CP3 out of town for what reason? Because he was getting old and he wasn't as durable. Westbrook shows that he's not going to be durable in the most needed moment. And then when he returns, and D'Antoni said in his return, he looks fresh. I'm glad he had a few days, few weeks off. He looks better. He's played poorly. This is all going to land on Westbrook.
Marcellus, you're answering a different question.
What?
Marcellus, if the question was who is more at fault for the Rockets losing the series in the event they lose, I'm with you. It's Russell Westbrook. I'm with you. I saw the end of last game. Anybody who has a pair of eyes.
Oh, you didn't see the game before?
Anybody that got it. Well, the game, I saw the fact that he didn't play early on. Then he came back, was supposed to be healthy and underperformed, underdelivered. So I'm with you on that if you want to say who's more at fault. But the second you bring up the word legacy, Marcellus, that has to do with how will one be remembered.
That's not the definition, but that's what we're going
to say. But that has to do with how will one be remembered. That has to do with when I think back upon the greatness or the lack thereof of a person, what are the implications? The Rockets are James Harden's team. So a loss to the Rockets hurts James Harden more than it will ever hurt Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook is just a passerbyer. He's here today, and he may be gone tomorrow, depending on how this works out, how this plays out. I see Russell Westbrook in Houston the same way we might see Paul George in Oklahoma City. That might just be a blimp on the radar. But James Harden is forever going to be remembered with the Rockets.
Right so now,
if them cats
right now,
L,
I'm going to ask you a question.
Go ahead.
What team do you remember Kevin Durant with?
Where he won them chips, too, though.
Oh, really? He's out of Thunder? He's out the Thunder?
Because first off, Sonic, and then the Thunder, and then he won them chips.
I don't
want
Wikipedia response.
You're asking me something more convoluted, sir. You're asking me a more convoluted question.
Oh, it's convoluted because it's not an easy answer.
It's convoluted.
Move on the slip.
No, we ain't moving on.
That's why I'm doing this.
We ain't moving on. It's convoluted. It's convoluted because Russ played 11 seasons for OKC.
He's
played one. Now,
you
go ahead now, Slick. Marcellus asking these convoluted, twisted questions.
I'm just asking a simple question based on what you were saying.
Marcellus, you said at the very beginning, Russell Westbrook is injured. He's coming back from injury. How can we possibly have a referendum on what he has done in this series when he's clearly not the same? The other part for me is, with Westbrook, there is no legacy to be determined, at this point. We know who Westbrook is. He is a tremendous individual player who has struggled to be able to combine his own individual talent with being a player who gets the most out of those around him. He had a chance to do it with KD. He had a chance to do it with Paul George. And then he came to Houston, and now he's trying to build himself around James Harden. But there's a Batman and there's a Robin. And in the same way that if the Lakers fail to win a championship, are we going to look at Anthony Davis and say, well, you just weren't up to the task? Are we going to say, ultimately, LeBron James didn't win that championship? That's the way it's going to stand. If the Clippers don't win a championship, are we going to say, you know what, Paul George just didn't do enough? No, we're going to look at Kawhi Leonard and say his experiment going from Toronto to the Clippers did not work. And the last game, game two, taking game six, taking it off of James Harden's plate. I didn't see James Harden wanting the ball at the end of that game. I haven't seen James Harden be aggressive at the end of games multiple times when it was winning time. I understand he's fatigued, but if you are that guy, then you can't carry it for 3.5 quarters. You've got to deliver at the end.
Let me get something.
James didn't, and ultimately that's why they lost, and that's why if they don't get out of this round, it sits on Harden.
Marcellus, I got a question for you, because Slick just made me a little bit smarter, and I like to think of myself as a smart man. And let me ask you, who would you say is the better player, Russell Westbrook or James Harden?
James Harden.
James Harden is a better player. To Slick's point, the brunt of the damage, the brunt of the legacy damage, it falls on the person who is the better player. Like Slick just alluded to, if the Lakers are to lose, it's not going to be AD's fault. It's going to be Bron's fault. Clippers are going to lose. It's not going to be PG's fault. It's going to be Kawhi's fault. Going back to LeBron when he was with the Heat, if them cats was going to lose, it wasn't going to be Chris Bosh's fault. It wasn't even going to be D-Wade's fault. It was going to be LeBron's fault, because the legacy damage, it falls on the shoulders of the person who is the better player. You, sir, just said yourself, James Harden, the better player. Accept defeat, Marcellus. That's what you need to do. Accept defeat.
You sound like my wife. No, I'm not. That's why we have a great marriage. I'm not going to bed till I win, even if I lose. Here's the thing. I hate to do this to you, because it's good to see you in the dictionary now after you already messed up the word and definition of legacy and made it your own. Now you want to go into the dictionary. So now I'm going to jump out the dictionary and into the basketball mindset. You bring up Slick Rick, LeBron, and AD, and then you bring up Kawhi and Paul George, and then you guys want to conflate that into a conversation of Batman and Robin and take it to say that that's the same as when we're talking about James Harden and Russell Westbrook. I'm going to ask you, in a LeBron AD conversation, Kawhi and Paul George conversation, any other MVPs in that conversation? LeBron is. Kawhi is. Is AD an MVP? No. Even a finals MVP? No. Is Kawhi MVP? No, but a two-time finals MVP. Here's my summary.
What's your summary? Because I'm confused.
Yeah.
I'm
James confused. Harden, well, no, Westbrook's MVP is
James Harden MVP?
Unusual circumstances.
Is James
Triple
Harden
doubles
MVP?
On a team that wasn't clear, near the top, top seat.
There's one answer to this. Is James Harden MVP? Is Russell Westbrook an MVP? So y'all keep going out there saying Batman and Robin when really it's maybe 1A, 1B, even though I think Harden is better. These are two guys who have full legacies on the line because these are two former MVPs that were supposed to combine forces. James Harden is playing at an all-time playoff level for himself. Russell Westbrook has been MIA or playing poorly when in that same moment. How in the hell is he not going to take criticism when he doesn't show up when they need him most? Coming up at the top of the hour, won that argument. If the best ability is availability, then Philly must be freaking out about Carson Wentz. But first, we'll tell you if Dak Prescott will make the Cowboys regret not locking him up to a long-term deal. Next, speak for yourself, then buy a Hyundai.
Marcellus, you're wrong.
You get it? You know, we're MVP.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Let's talk Dak Prescott. Playing under the franchise tag this season for just over $31 million, the Cowboys legend Emmitt Smith called out his former team for not getting a long-term deal done, saying if they're trying to mess with Dak mentally.
Devin, Snicker Man, speak for yourself.
Okay, you're still mad you was wrong last segment. Emmitt Smith said that if they're playing with Dak mentally from a financial standpoint, they're going to affect the whole chemistry of the entire team.
Illiterate. Uncomfortable illiteracy. What a black man.
What up, LeVar? I'm done with Marcellus for today, but unfortunately, I got to hear him first. Marcellus.
Yes.
Is this whole contract dispute, is it going to affect the chemistry of the team? But more importantly, are the Cowboys going to regret not giving Dak a contract extension?
Oh, absolutely they're going to regret not giving him an extension. But they're also going to reap the benefits of not giving him an extension. You got to remember the two pressure moments for Dak Prescott.
Which one is it, dude?
Oh, man,
which one is it? You just said both.
I know. Watch how deep I get.
Oh.
Okay, two gun-to-your-head moments for Dak Prescott is one, when you get drafted in the fourth round. I don't know anything about that. I'll show you. Anyway, when you're drafted that low and you're thinking, past. Like, my first year is going to be chill, red shirt, whatever, and then they hit you upside the head, yoo-hoo, Romo's hurt, we need you to go out there and start. Gun to your head as a rookie fourth rounder, and you become the franchise quarterback and lead them to 13 wins into the playoffs. Then you fast forward a few years and they put the gun in your head again and say, when I give you a new contract, go out there and show us what you can do. Boom, 4,900 passing yards and the number one offense in the NFL. So they're going to reap the benefits of trying to play games with Dak and his money. But Dak's going to make so much money in the process. Kind of like that Acorn investment app. You know how you just put a couple bucks in there and you look up, you're like, damn, I got a lot more money. That's what's happening to him. He is riding this bull market. You're talking about inflation. Every single thing that Dak Prescott does is making him so much money to the tune of a sentence that says he's going to make twice as much as Patrick Mahomes in the next 3 years. So, yeah, they're going to regret playing with his money, but they're going to reap the benefits because the boy going to ball out. LeVar, that's how you say it both sides.
Let me tell you about Marcellus, bruh. Marcellus loses arguments, so he tries to mess up my script reads to undermine the success I'm having.
I saw what he did.
He tried me. Let me get to the point. Marcellus, you're wrong again. Okay, the Cowboys aren't going to regret it, and because of exactly what you said. Think about this, people. Dak Prescott has already done statistically anything you could ask a quarterback to do. All-time Cowboys passer rating record. Since he's come into the league, tied for second with the most wins you can have. Top five last year in passing yards. He's one of the best statistical quarterbacks the game has seen since he's come into the league. So if you're the Dallas Cowboys, you have to pay Dak Prescott based on everything he has done statistically. But yet you still haven't. So what's missing, Marcellus? The only thing Dak Prescott has yet to accomplish is a Super Bowl win. He won a playoff game.
Yeah.
He would have gone to the NFC Championship game if his defense wouldn't have let Aaron Rodgers get a field goal in 40 seconds or less. So the only thing Dak Prescott can still accomplish to get paid is win a Super Bowl. But if Dak wins a Super Bowl, Marcellus, they're not going to regret paying him because you won a Super Bowl. Take as much money as you want, Dak, if you win. But if they don't win a Super Bowl this year, what's going to happen? Tag, you're it. They'll tag him again next year. No regrets, no love lost. If they win a Super Bowl next year, bet they're not going to regret it because they won the Super Bowl. If they don't win a Super Bowl, Marcellus, they'll let him walk like the Redskins did with Kirk Cousins. Cowboys are in a win-win situation right now. You're either going to win a Super Bowl with Dak Prescott getting tagged, or you're not, and you're going to let Dak Prescott go. But either way, if you're the Cowboys, you have no regrets because you're the dealer, and you're dealing out whatever hand you feel like. And again, the house always wins. The Dallas Cowboys, Jerry Jones, they're the house.
When the student is ready to learn, the teacher appears. I think you knocked that so far out of the park, Acho. I would be repeating, in essence, pretty much everything Acho was saying.
You didn't prepare again. You ain't got nothing else again, huh?
No, I'm prepared. I'm always prepared. And I can be redundant as well and use words like that, you know, even though I went to a state school for college. Shouts out to We Are Penn State. I don't think they're in a win-win situation. They are not in a position where they want to pay him the amount of money that he was demanding that he wanted. I think they felt as though as time would play out that or go on that Dak's position would improve and that a deal would eventually be done. And that has not happened. That confirms that Dallas does not want to pay him the figure that he's coming to the table with and being firm with. So to me, looking at it from the standpoint of giving a franchise tag to Dak to play out this year, at any point in time, if Dak plays well, you can rip up the contract and start negotiating what you want the extension to be or new contract itself. If he doesn't play well, then you sit there and you say, we can start negotiating Dak, but let's be more realistic on the numbers that you're looking for. If Dak plays so well that he doesn't want to re-up on a contract moving forward, some would say that that's the loss that Dallas takes and maybe the premise of the question being asked. But really, in reality, if you have to pay him a dollar figure that you're not comfortable paying, even if he does perform well, then you'd have to say Dallas is still in a win-win situation. No regrets.
Oh, no, they could lose. Obviously, you guys never took a business class because...
I took a couple, actually, sir.
Well, at Texas, so, I mean, you really haven't... There we go. This is what you're trying to do. You're trying to get the most services for the least amount of expenses. Like, that's kind of like always the goal underlying all businesses, right? Now, they already try to play Dak on the cheap. And now you're trying to say they're not going to have a regret if they have to pay them max dollars and value? Yes, they are in their mindset. All of us are agreeing that Dak's going to get paid, but they're reluctant to pay him exactly what he wants because they're like, man, we trying to get this dude on the cheap. Then let me give it to you because Acho, once again, created an imaginary threshold that is going to galvanize Dak Prescott in the head of Jerry Jones to a place where he's going to have tremendous confidence to say, you know what, here's the checkbook, write whatever you want. That's not how it works because you don't need a Super Bowl to be the highest paid quarterback. Ask Jimmy G about that. Jared Goff, hi. Kirk Cousins, Carson
Wentz. Both played
Wentz,
in the Super Bowl. Yes,
all of these guys who have not won a Super Bowl or even talk about it being in a Super Bowl.
Well, Cousins wasn't. But two, the first two were in the Super Bowl.
You're making my point. There are a lot of porous holes in your argument. Dak Prescott was tried by Jerry Jones to be played on the cheap. And he answered the bell. So now Dak Prescott's like, the rabbit's got the gun, Jerry, and there's nothing you can do except reap the benefits of my production as I reap the rewards of what you're going to pay me.
The problem is the gun has no bullets in it. So Dak Prescott is holding said figurative gun at Jerry, and there's nothing to shoot.
How? Dak can't lose.
He can lose. Now, if we're talking about $30-plus million, sure. No, he can't lose. But here is how. What can Dak already accomplish, Marcellus, everything you can? No. Literally has the passer rating record for the Cowboys, again, if I'm not mistaken. He literally is the second winningest quarterback since he got into the league. He's top five in passing yards last year. What else can Dak accomplish, Marcellus? Not rhetorical, serious question.
What else can he accomplish?
To get paid.
All of those individual... Look, I love Dak. I'm just laughing at how Jerry is now forced in the corner and is going to have to give Dak exactly what he wants. Yes, he is. Let me tell you this.
Please.
They already walked up to Dak Prescott reluctantly and said, damn it, how much have you made in your entire football career? We're going to give you 8x that amount for just 1 year, and then we're going to have this conversation again. That's complete leverage to Dak Prescott, who is not a top five quarterback, but will be in the conversation of highest paid, if not second highest paid. Depends on Lamar Jackson, depends on Deshaun Watson. But he's going to be right there, slotted behind Patrick Mahomes, making more than
Marcellus,
Patrick Mahomes
here's your problem.
Without doing the same as Patrick Mahomes.
Here is your problem.
That's a win.
The only way the Cowboys will regret not paying Dak, the only way is if they pay him without winning. But that's not going to happen. If they wanted to pay Dak Prescott without winning a Super Bowl, they would have done that this past year. The only thing Dak can accomplish that he hasn't accomplished already, play in an NFC Championship game or play in the Super Bowl. Those are the only two things Dak Prescott can accomplish that he has yet to accomplish.
May I retort? The devil's in the details. Sure. Dak had an old agent, and him and his old agent had them kind of locked in at a number. Dak said, forget that, switch agents. New agents said, hey, bro, that number's too low. Put the gun to your head, Dak. Go out there and bet on yourself. He did. Now Jerry and them like, what happened to the old number? They like, that thing is in the wind. So now Dak Prescott sits there knowing that he's already getting $31 million for just 1 year and hasn't won a Super Bowl, hasn't been in a Super Bowl, hasn't been in a conference championship. And Jerry is on record saying he's our quarterback for the future. And Dak is on record saying, I'm going to be a Cowboy for life. And they know they have to get married, but they're going to have to pay the expenses that Dak Prescott runs
LA,
up.
LA, I got
game.
Him against the ropes. You want a couple last knockout blows?
I mean, I'm going to blow on his head, and he's going to fall over, and we're going to give him like a Mr. Miyagi. Listen, they already have put their contingency plan in place by signing Andy Dalton.
And the whole point is Andy?
Hold on. Andy had a pretty good career in Cincinnati and is more than up to the task of being a quarterback for the team until they get to a draft pick that they feel good about to be the next guy. So as you're speaking of business 101, Mr. Columbia, the reality that exists for Dak Prescott right now is he does not have any real leverage. He really doesn't.
LeVar, if I walked up to you right now and said, how much have you made as a broadcaster? And then I said, and you gave me all that number, whatever millions it is. And I say, for the next 1 year, because I know it took you like 5-10 years to get there, For the next 1 year, I'm going to give you 8 times that, then we're going to talk again.
No, LeVar.
Come on, that's not
Marcellus. You know better than anybody else. It is all in perspective. All you're telling me is that Dak Prescott used to be underpaid. Just because he's getting 8X does not mean he's still in the top 10.
If we're speaking frank, I'm in the same situation as Dak Prescott.
Your contract is up at the end of the month. We know.
I am in the same position as Dak Prescott. Like, I've come on and I proved that I'm good enough to be good enough, right? But in reality, all I can do is do my job and do the job that I do as best I can and hope that that is lending towards what my reputation is going to be.
All right, enough of your commercial. Chill out. Here, all I know is L.A., you're going to get
paid. You made the comparison.
L.A.,
you made the comparison. I have no leverage.
Dak is not
To get anything more than what I get.
Dak was an
exclusive
franchise
Marcellus,
tag.
I'm going to say this right here.
Let Dak go to the free agent market and see what happens.
If Dak Prescott does not get to the Super Bowl if Dak don't get to the Super Bowl in the next 2 years, do not be surprised if he is not a Dallas Cowboy after that, just like Kirk Cousins was not on the Redskins.
And how much has Kirk Cousins made? Has that hurt him?
Did Kirk Cousins make it with the Reds, with the Washington football team? No.
LeVar, you already said that. Kirk Cousins made the Redskins regret letting him go.
What are we calling him?
Hold on now. You're putting words in my mouth.
You're putting words in my mouth.
I remember.
All I'm saying is even if Dak Prescott hits the open market and we will, I don't know if we'll ever know if he gets the number that they said that he wants right now.
Too much.
But what we do know is that the Dallas Cowboys, if they felt as though he was that invaluable where you had to keep him happy to stay as a Cowboy, they would have did the deal this offseason. With everything that happened with Ezekiel Elliott last year and him holding out and Dak like, look, I'm going to keep practicing. No worries. I'm the QB. Here's some good faith, goodwill. You still didn't do his contract after he had one of his career seasons. They would have paid him.
A new book reveals that Bill Belichick didn't give Brady special treatment, and it may have led to Tom Brady leaving. We'll tell you what to make of all that. That's next. Speak for Yourself, presented by
Feature Appears.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Let's move on to Bill Belichick and Tom Brady drama, whose relationship was in question in the seasons leading up to Brady's departure to Tampa. In a new book, The Dynasty, the friction between the two is detailed, including Belichick's banishment of Brady's trainer and business partner, Alex Guerrero. Brady's wife, Giselle, even expressed her frustration at Robert Kraft's house on how Belichick was treating her husband. Here's an excerpt. Quote, Giselle pointed out how ridiculous it was that after all these years, Belichick still treated Brady like bleeping Johnny Foxborough. Hilarious. It was bad enough to never voice approval. It was bleep to still be dressing down the most accomplished quarterback in league history during team meetings and treating his personal trainer and best friend like some kind of outcast. Giselle, stick up for your man. Joined once again by LeVar Arrington Acho. Would you blame Belichick for treating Brady that way?
Absolutely. See, Marcellus, the older I get, the more I realize who is a child got a whooping. See, we call them whooping. Some people call them spankings, but I understand who got a whooping. You see, early on in my younger years, my Nigerian household, I got some whoopings, right? When I was about 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. But after you get to about 12, 13 years old, you no longer get them whoopings. Now you get grounded. Right now, they take your cell phone, or you can't go out on the weekends with your friends. But then as you get older, about 16, 17, 18, you don't get whoopings. You don't get grounded. Now it's just like you're an adult. You know the difference between right and wrong. You're about to go off to college. You've been in the house for 17 years now. You should know what to do. See, as Tom Brady started to get older with Bill Belichick, he shouldn't have gotten berated like he was a rookie. He shouldn't have got verbal or these figurative whoopings. As Tom Brady is going on his 17th and 18th year in the league, especially with the same organization, with the same coach, Belichick should start to treat Tom Brady differently, one, because of Tom Brady's maturation, but also because of who Tom Brady is. Tom Brady didn't need to be dog cussed like when he was in his first year coming out of Michigan. Tom Brady should have been respected, admired, and treated as the greatest of all time, realizing that Tom Brady is Tom Brady's biggest motivating factor. So, yes, I do blame Bill Belichick, not only for the demise of himself and Tom Brady, but I blame Bill Belichick for treating Tom Brady like just anybody else when Tom Brady is far from just anybody else.
I disagree with you right there. Strong points. I understand that that is a slice of reality, but that's not the Patriot way, and that's not the way that supports building the dynasty and returning every year to that level of greatness. What happened here is simple. Your description made it seem like Brady got brand new. Like, all of a sudden, Tom Brady, rookie year, I could take the hits, I could take the talk. All of a sudden, I start winning a few things, I start driving something different, I start hearing my name said in higher esteem. How dare you talk to me like I'm that? And I understand that most people will feel that way. But that ain't how Bill Belichick feels. Because Bill Belichick's like, look, I know you're a star, but I can't let that star shine brighter than this team, because if it does, I don't have the same culture. Guys are going to start talking about double standards. And that's one way to look at it, and I think that's the Belichick way. But deeper than that, stop acting like Tom Brady didn't raise his hand to have all of the culture placed on his back and be the enforcer. Y'all know Willie McGinnis. Y'all know Ty Law. I'm not talking about how they played. I'm talking about how they are as people. Y'all know that some of these guys that walked in, even Rob Gronkowski, Julian Edelman, boy, you have latitude. Cam Newton right now, you have latitude to be who you are as a New England Patriot. Oh, sorry, Tom Brady. You bought into the sauce because at the time that you were a Patriot, you didn't believe fully in yourself. Now, that's my next layer. Belichick, a defensive-minded coach, as a head coach, struggled. 5 of his first 6 years were losing seasons, even though Cleveland went to the playoffs once and haven't been back since. But Belichick struggled compared to how great he was as a defensive coordinator. So here's a defensive-minded coach looking in the 6th round of a draft and finds a quarterback that he didn't even need because they already had Drew Bledsoe at $100 million. He said, all right, go get him. He's too much value at the 6th round. Now sit. And then he obviously gets thrusted into the starting lineup because of injury. And then Tom Brady starts to mature because Belichick is sitting there working with him. Imagine creating this in the laboratory. Whether you want to say it's all Tom Brady, all Belichick, or the blame or the share goes to both. Whatever it is, it's Belichick and Brady. And then all of a sudden, one day, Brady wakes up and says, excuse me, treat me different. And he's like, I treat you like all my players. If you want to be who you are, you have the latitude. If you don't complain to me, because I'm building a team, not just an individual culture.
Marcellus, you're going to answer this very simply for me.
No, Marcellus.
For yourself. Marcellus, you've told me that you have a beautiful family. Marcellus, how old is your oldest?
21. 2-1, Holmes.
How young is your youngest?
5 months.
Do you treat the 21-year-old like you treat the 5-month-old? You don't. I don't even need you to answer.
She don't even understand how I treat her yet.
You don't. And you don't, because there's a level of maturation that comes with age. There's a level of maturation that comes with experience. And in my opinion, there would have to be some level of trust that you have for an older one that you don't have for the younger one.
It's like we're full of men.
So how do you, though you treat differently, how can you be like, you know what, Belichick? You got to treat everybody the same. Everybody's not the same. You simply said so yourself, LeVar.
You're kind of making the point in a way, Acho. He's not his dad. He's a father figure in some respects and regards, I'm sure. But that's not his dad. The love that you have for your child is not going to be the same love you have for your players. And that's just truth. But here's my thing, right?
What's your thing?
Giselle should be thinking, and I hate going to like wives, spouses, siblings, whatever that may be, family. I hate doing it, but it is what it is. She said it, so I'm going to jump on it. She should be thanking Bill Belichick for her husband, because had Bill Belichick not developed Tom Brady to the player that he became, he probably wouldn't even been popular enough to marry her in the first place. So she actually shouldn't be hating. She should be appreciating him. I was there in college. There was a time where I was more revered and highly respected and highly rated than Tom Brady. Tom Brady, if we want to jog our memories, was never even a starter in college. He was like here and there. He started here and there. Mm. When we prepared for them, we prepared for the other guy, Henson. We were like, Tom snuck up on us. Tom wasn't the guy that won the Rose Bowl. That was Greasy. It was never his team in Ann Arbor. So it's interesting. We don't talk about him being a legend at Michigan, all right? Mm. We talk about him being a legendary Patriot that is now considered a legend at Michigan because what he's done in the pros. So this is a non-issue to me. If you think about Customato and how his relationship was with Mike Tyson, he never let up on Mike. And when Mike left Customato and started dealing with other dudes, what happened? Things went off the rails and Mike's career suffered from it because he did not have that influence of somebody who could be real to him and train him the right way and have that influence on him. So I agree in the sense that Tom matured and grew up and became Tom that won all of the Super Bowls. But don't forget your humble roots. Don't forget where you came from. Because if you forget where you came from, you'll never know where you're going. And I think that this is a classic situation. You want to know what privilege is. That's what Giselle was exercising when she was in front of Mr. Kraft saying that she had problems with the way the guy that pulled the best stunt ever, which was taking a guy like Tom Brady and making him the GOAT of GOATs as a quarterback. Bottom line.
Man, you broke that down. No, thank you.
He broke it. He
broke
it. He's
fathers broken
here
down.
He's broken now.
We know the circle of life because we're fathers. We know what real unconditional love look like. We know how to rear development. And this is about development. This is not about just, hey, I got a good player. Now he's great. How do I handle him? It's about developing that guy all the time. Belichick was coaching Tom Brady for 20 years. There was a point where Tom Brady wanted him to coach TB12. And Belichick was like, chill, bro. So I'm going to take your parking pass. I thought it was petty, but Belichick has petty ways to make sure he reinforces his culture. And then Alex Guerrero and how comfortable he was, he said, now, I know you're training Gronk, and Gronk can't get healthy. He stays hurt. And you're training Tom Brady. Maybe I want to keep all this in-house because I want to be responsible for my players' health, not let them be outsourced. And whatever happened in deeper friction, it happened. But then Belichick got petty again because you got to remember, Tom Brady used to go to Bob Kraft and talk to Bob Kraft a lot about his situation. Remember, Kraft, Tom Brady, and Jimmy G all have the same agent. It's weird how this plays, man. So he used to go to Kraft's house, and Kraft was like, look, I'm going to take care of you. Belichick won't get rid of you early like he does a lot of our legends. And then Brady was like, thank you, thank you. And then it got to a point where Brady was like, man, Belichick treat me crazy. Hey, will you let me go? 2018. And they were like, nah, I already protected you against the Jimmy G trade. Now you got to stay. And Tom Brady took that to heart. Say, I'm going to stay a couple more years, Belichick and Bob Kraft. But this is not feeling good. He felt a little betrayed. The point of all of this is the details of how this relationship, this marriage, blossomed into something that the egos took over the room and then they couldn't share the same space. It happens in all rap
groups. But it's clearly a flip.
Singing groups.
It's clearly a flip, fellas.
It's a flip.
By the way Giselle handled it, it's clearly a flip. And that makes it wrong to me.
Yeah. Now, Acho, have some kids and then we'll talk about this. Coming up, Alvin Kamara is back at Saints camp. We'll tell you if New Orleans should pay him what he wants to help Drew Brees' legacy. Next, Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself. Let's move on to Alvin Kamara, who was back at Saints camp today after being MIA since Friday. His absence led to speculation of a contract dispute, which led to reports that the Saints were open to trading him. But Kamara reportedly had a, quote, nice talk with Sean Payton to clear the air. The two sides will keep working towards a long-term deal, which would make Drew Brees happy since there's been talk that this could be Drew Brees' last chance at another Super Bowl before he retired. LeVar back with us, but Marcellus, answer me this. Do the Saints owe it to Drew Brees to make Alvin Kamara happy?
No, they don't owe it to Drew Brees. If you look at this, the situation Drew Brees finds himself in right now, having to fight tooth and nail to even get his contract 2-year, $50 million, despite being an MVP candidate and Drew Brees, lets you know that no one's rushing him out the door, but they know where the door is in this situation. This is obviously supposed to be his last year. And Drew Brees is a tremendous person. and obviously an amazing quarterback. But Alvin Kamara is interesting. He needs to focus in on himself, and Drew Brees needs to focus in on himself. Drew Brees has the $17 million backup. Don't y'all forget it. And another backup who was a starting quarterback last year threw for 5,000 yards. So it's not like they're sitting there saying if Drew Brees is not there that they still can't go forward. And Alvin Kamara has to realize the same thing. This is a guy that there's still question marks about his game, his durability, and his game. Let's talk about how never 1,000 rushing yards. You can say, oh, well, he's a receiving running back as well. 81 catches every single year. Yeah, but the yards every single year have decreased. Fewer every single year. Then you could talk about the durability and never starting 16 games or not always available for this team. So that's why he's reportedly now in camp and trying to work through this negotiation. I think they want him. I think they want him at a certain price. And then it's still a little bit of a prove-it moment in that deal. There's going to be some prove-it space because Alvin Kamara still has some questions to answer.
The problem with what you said, Marcellus, is you talked about want. It's not about what the Saints want for Drew Brees. It's about what the Saints need. Mm-hmm. And the Saints need Alvin Kamara if they want to win a Super Bowl. Drew Brees, we know that his arm is being held together by duct tape. Phenomenal duct tape, but it's being held together by duct tape. Think about it. 3 years ago, Minnesota Miracle, the Saints were knocking on the door. 2 years ago, Saints got ripped off by a bad call. Then last year, you lose in overtime in a playoff. They have been knocking on the door of a Super Bowl, but yet they still haven't been able to kick that thing in. Drew Brees is 1 to 2 years away from calling games from a booth instead of calling them from behind center. So if they want to win this thing, you don't just owe it to Drew Brees, you owe it to yourself as an organization. Because riddle me this. In the event you're going to trade Kamara for a first-round pick, a second-round pick, by the time that pick can contribute, Drew Brees ain't going to be on the field. So bump trading Kamara for any future value when you have present needs. The Saints not only owe it to Drew Brees, more importantly, they owe it to themselves. Because if you want to win, the road to success is paved through Alvin Kamara.
Yeah, I kind of extend on that point. That if they're owing anything, they're going to owe it to doing what's best for the organization. And where we're at right now, currently, in terms of looking at Drew Brees and what he brings to the table, they are planning on what the next steps are post Drew Brees. They've already been doing that. As you think about what's taking place with running backs, Kamara better say that he had a great conversation with Peyton. He better say that he feels good about what's going on. Look at what's taking place. Leonard Fournette is one of the most elite backs in the game, an amazing running back, just released. They're saying he may only command $1 million on the open market. Be careful what you do. Be careful what you wish for. Be careful what you hope for, because sometimes that treat could turn out to be a trick. And Aaron, when you look at Kamara and his situation, it's better for him to get into camp and get on the roster and get something signed that both sides can live with, because I don't think they owe it to Drew Brees, and they certainly aren't going to look like Alvin and say they owe it to him either.
Yeah, this is interesting, man. Looking at Drew Brees, obviously I played with him. I saw him first snap in the NFL. He was drafted to the San Diego Chargers when I was there. And, man, first year, one touchdown, no interceptions, didn't really get on the field. Next year, they starts the whole year, 17 touchdowns, 16 interceptions, trying to figure it out. Like, I don't know. Imagine if social media was around when Drew Brees was starting off like this and how they would have tried to tear him apart. Third year, 11 touchdowns, 15 interceptions. And you're starting to say, oh, this is going south. This is going the wrong direction after this third year. And then they draft the Philip Rivers. Remember that? And then our boy goes out there, 27 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, gets franchised, and they sitting there with two quarterbacks, and then Drew Brees tears his labrum off the bone, off the torso in week 17. Bad breaks for Drew Brees. Signs his extension. Peyton gets suspended 1 year. Unreal. 2017, they lose. Minnesota Miracle. 2018, 13-2 season. Oh, the no PI call against the Rams, opportunity lost again. Then he signs this $50 million extension they had to fight tooth and nail for, Drew Brees, the same kind of money they're giving to Philip Rivers and the same money they give to an older Brady. Drew Brees can't get it, but he finally signs that extension. Then he finds himself in controversy. Lost his position at the picnic. Can't even be on the grill anymore in the picnic. Now he's in the position, can't even speak his own truth. And he's wearing Jacob Blake tape on at practice and got to go out there and fight for Alvin Kamara. I'm just looking at this situation as it's really unfortunate that all of the circumstances that has led or gotten in the way of Drew Brees' greatness, it may actually cloud how we're going to look at Drew Brees. So in this situation, I hope it works out. Kamara gets his extension. He is reliable, durable, and productive. So Drew Brees can finally go out maybe with a swan song. It'd be nice to see that.
Yeah, to me, Marcellus, there's just nothing cloudy about it. Drew Brees has to realize, to a degree, right now in the imminent future, his success is dependent on number 41. Before Kamara was with Brees, Brees' winning percentage, 58. Since, it's 76%. Before Kamara was with Brees, Brees' completion percentage, 67. Since, 74. Before Kamara was with Drew Brees, his passer rating, 99. Since, 111. Drew Brees is a phenomenal quarterback on his way to the Hall of Fame, but if he wants to be on his way to his second Super Bowl championship, he needs to ride the back of that man, number 41.
Mark Ingram. Sorry.
The Saints are, the Saints are looking at not having fans in the stadium. The Saints are looking at not having parking lots full. The Saints are looking at advertisers and marketers not using and paying the type of money that they've paid in years past. This is the worst time for somebody to be asking if the Saints owe Drew Brees the keeping Alvin Kamara happy. It's a pandemic, people, and things are being done differently. They are not going to put themselves in any type of risk to try to pay Kamara to make Drew Brees happy. That's not good. It doesn't work out that way.
We will see. Coming up in our big story, Doug Peterson says Carson Wentz's latest injury is minor. Well, I'm going to tell you why that minor problem is not going to be a major issue for the Eagles. That's next. Speak for yourself.
You want to speak for yourself, Marcellus Wiley, Emmanuel Acho. Time for our big story.
Uh-oh.
Let's move on to Carson Wentz. Woo. Who didn't practice Tuesday with what's being called a lower body injury. Wentz's injury history is well documented. The Eagles quarterback has missed 13 games, including the playoffs, to injuries in his NFL career. The Eagles open their season in less than 2 weeks, but Doug Peterson feels confident Wentz will be ready. Listen to this.
What Carson's working through right now is nothing major. It's just it's minor and it's day to day. And you know, this is actually a good time for, you know, this week. To rest. As you guys know, if we played a game on Thursday, a preseason game, he wouldn't play this week anyway. So all the backups would go. So this is really a good time for him to really rest and for the majority of our starters to kind of rest and prepare themselves, you know, for next week. So I have no issues of where Carson is, where he's headed, and he'll be ready to go.
Liar. Oh, Acho, sorry. Should the Eagles already be worried about your boy Carson Wentz?
Yeah, okay, let me say
come
something.
Come on, man.
There's never a good time to be hurt. Let's get that out of the way. Come on, Doug.
Like he mapped it to the calendar.
I like your way. There's never a good time to be hurt.
Come
but
on.
Eagles fans, let me talk to y'all because y'all know I mess with y'all. Mm. Don't be worried about Carson Wentz. I'm going to talk to y'all and I'm going to talk to my brother Marcellus. Marcellus,
yeah.
Carson Wentz played 98.6% of the Eagles snaps last year. Third highest on a team. Carson Wentz played the 7 most percentage snaps of any quarterback in the NFL last year. What I need you to do is what I saw and read that the state of California does, Marcellus.
Oh.
You see, in the state of California, after a while, if you have a misdemeanor, your record gets expunged based on a certain amount of time. What that means
really?
Is your slate gets wiped clean. The problem with you, Marcellus, is that you continue to look at Carson Wentz through this 2017-2018 lens. You continue to look at this Carson Wentz as if it's the old Carson Wentz, when in fact he played the entire regular season healthy last year. And you're going to bring up, he got hurt in the playoffs.
Oh, they got Eminem
Marcellus,
time.
if a 280-pound man cheap shots you,
that's
you probably
time.
Get hurt too.
I'm good.
So I don't look at Carson Wentz getting cheap shotted. I don't count that against him because that was illegal and not in the course of play. So what I need you to do is get out of your own way, Marcellus, and go ahead and wipe Carson Wentz's slate clean because he's not the injury-prone quarterback that you, along with the rest of the media, want to make him out to be.
Wow. Okay. You took a lot of shots at me instead of shots to make your point, but okay.
I did both.
That's the theater we're going to do. Should Eagles already be worried about Carson Wentz? Yes. they were already worried. And let's describe what worried means.
Please.
Emotionally, kind of out over your skis. Mm-hmm. Like, not just in reality, but anxiety, thoughts. Like, oh, there's some issues going on with my reality. So how do I handle them? The Eagles handled them all right. They weren't just worried. They were prepared for this situation.
I know where he's going.
I know the truth hurts. Excuse me. The truth, Jalen Hurts. And I understand that you don't want to accept this reality. I've been there before in the NFL headquarters, in the offices at San Diego Chargers. I remember there are two war rooms. And there's one where they're talking about the prospects. And there's one they're talking about the active players. And in those war rooms, you know when coaches sit around with GMs and capologists and the owner, they're not always talking about us in glowing terms. There was a conversation they must have had about Carson Wentz saying, the dude can ball when the dude is available. I have a full screen right here, full screen king, showing Carson Wentz's injury history. And you lied on the record. You said, you always talk about 2017, 2018. Let's start in 2020, y'all. A concussion. Let's go down to the back injury, ACL, LCL tear, rib fracture, wrist fracture. We're talking about 13 games in the NFL he's missed, 8 games in college. And of those 13 games in the NFL, don't let the little font make you think those are just regular season games. One includes the Super Bowl. One includes playoff games. So the point of this is, Acho, I want you to realize that I'm going to try this man as an adult.
Okay.
I'm not going to expunge his record.
Understood.
I'm going to say all of these crimes of not being available is going to count against you, Carson Wentz. And that was the conversation that led them to a Jalen Hurts.
Marcellus, how do I feel about this full screen?
Don't you do that. Respect your...
That's how I feel about your full screen, Marcellus, gangster, in the trash. Let me tell you why.
Okay.
The Eagles played on a... Carson Wentz played on a team last year in Philadelphia where Zach Ertz lacerated his kidney. Tough, dude. Gets hurt, had to play through that. DeSean Jackson hurt. Alshon Jeffries hurt. Nelson Aguilar missed his time. Everybody on the Eagles roster, including Jason Peters, future Hall of Fame left tackle, missed his time. You want to know who didn't? You want to know who stood tall in the pocket, Marcellus, time after time?
Yeah.
Carson Wentz. You want to know who has started more games than Matthew Stafford, Aaron Rodgers, Jared Goff since getting into the league? Carson Wentz. So you're going to sit here, Marcellus, and look at a bunch of dated data. That's what you're doing. You're looking at a bunch of dated data, and you're trying to make an argument based off things that are out of date. The fact of the matter is you need to update yourself. We, the media, we have to get off this lazy narrative. Who else missed time this camp? DeAndre Hopkins. But we're not looking at DeAndre Hopkins saying, well, he missed time. We should all be worried.
We're not, because
DeAndre Hopkins hasn't been hurt recently.
No.
Carson Wentz also hasn't been hurt recently. So let's stop talking about 2018, although we like to live in the past, 2016, 2015, and let's talk about the here and the now.
Let me help you out.
I need no help.
You need some help right now. Dog, he stay hurt. Like, this is just a thing. Like, I understand you're trying to pick out the times where he was there, 98.6% of all snaps. I'm just going to tell you this. If you watched the playoffs last year, you didn't see Carson Wentz finish that game, did you?
You did.
For whatever reason, in football, a lot of things happen, mostly legal, sometimes illegal. Point of it is, they're looking at it like, is this another domino in the narrative against Carson Wentz? And unfortunately, it is. As we used to call him, can't get right. You remember can't get right. Like, no matter what happens,
come on, bro.
Something bad happens to you.
Can I ask you a question?
Let me ask you a question, because
that's what we do here. If Carson Wentz doesn't have the concussion.
No, I'm asking you.
I'm just serious question. Okay. Serious question. If Wentz doesn't have this concussion, do you still make the same argument?
You know why? Because we were having an argument before that, and that's why we were saying, please don't get hurt. And that's the one thing he did. He stepped exactly into the narrative against him. He's not just fighting injuries, brother. I'm an injury-prone player. That's why I went from here to there, because of injuries. He's not just fighting those injuries. He's fighting the perception that he's injury-prone. One of the knocks against Carson Wentz coming out of college, you know this, you study college football, was kind of getting banged up a lot. All right, whatever. We're still going to draft him. He's a franchise quarterback. And then when they need him, and need him most, he's played one quarter of January football.
Let's be real.
For a Super Bowl winning team.
Let's stop doing this for the show. Let's be real, me and you.
Keeping it 1,000.
Let's keep it at a buck.
Oh, let's get it personal.
Okay, now look. Mm-hmm. So you really, if Wentz plays 2019 completely healthy, doesn't get a concussion, you're going to sit here, and if he's hurt right now, you're going to say, based on Wentz being hurt in 2018 and 2017, you would tell me, be worried, Eagles fans, he was hurt 600 days ago.
Hold on. He's been hurt every, this list, only 2019 is the only one he wasn't hurt. And guess why? Because he went to January of 2020. But he waited a month.
Isn't that what matters?
Every year. No, here's the thing. Let me tell you. As an injury-prone player, I felt the pressure. And I remember walking around in San Diego, my third year, seventh year in the league, and I kept saying, I can't get hurt again. Not because I'm playing good or playing great or whatever. I just can't keep feeding that negative narrative against me. And guess what? I remember going to training camp practice. Hamstring gave on me. I faked it during that practice just because I couldn't even go to our training room and tell them, here I go again, because I know they're going to give me that eye roll. Wiley hurt again. So guess what I did? I called my doctor. He drove up to the Carson parking lot. Doc Murray manipulating, active releasing my hamstring just because I didn't want to get hurt again. I know what Carson Wentz is going through between here, man. It's not a pretty place. Coming up, new Giants head coach Joe Judge is endearing himself to his players with a good old roll in the mud, brother. We'll break it down next. Speak for yourself.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself. Let's talk about Joe Judge and the Giants, whose training camp methods were getting him the label as a taskmaster. Yes, I said it. But Judge showed his fun side on Tuesday, diving for a football in the mud at practice to show a fumble recovery drill. The players were even chanting his name, Judge, while dousing him with water. LeVar is back, but Marcellus, I need to know, what do you make of Joe Judge's antics with the players?
Oh, I love it so much. Joe Judge, what a 180 you've done already in this offseason. And look at the range, like being a disciplinarian, maybe even a dictator, some were thinking at first. New sheriff in town, new rules. Oh, is he hard-nosed? And then he shows this side of him. The humanity, the fact that he gets it, guys. I'm putting you guys through hell, but I'll go through hell with you as well. And every player always sits there and peeks at their coach like, could you ever be our 12th man? Like, the stuff you're asking us to do, could you do
would
it?
You do it?
Would you do it as well? Even if we know physically you couldn't do it. And it's just good to know that coach is on the same playing field with you. Anybody who doesn't like this is holding on to something personal. Like they're trolling now. Now they just got this fake stance. It's kind of like me with Laker fans, you know? I just go at them because I know they're going to respond. Anybody who's not feeling that this coach has latitude and has showed his players that I'm going to put you through it, but I'm going to go through it with you, is not somebody I fully respect.
You know, Joe Judge, I respect you, man, for this one. Giants fans, I saw your tweets. Giants fans, I saw your Instagram DMs. And I respect this. Joe Judge, like Marcellus said, he's shown the range of Johnny Depp. He's shown that he can be a tough disciplinarian. And now he's making people ha-ha and key-key. I like that.
Here we go.
But.
I knew it. I don't like you.
There's always a but.
I knew
Giants
like
fans, this is fun. This is great. This ain't got nothing to do with these wins or these L's that y'all will likely have to take. Again, I like that Joe Judge can put smiles on his players' faces. But a coach, a Hall of Fame coach, told me the fun is in winning. Joe Judge is clinging to that football like Giants fans are going to have to cling to wins this season because it's going to be hard to find. They're going to be covered in mud. They're going to be a little hard to cling to because the water's around it. Again, Giants fans, I wish y'all nothing but success. I ain't got no hate in my blood. Eagles don't cut my checks no more. Fox does. What I'm speaking is reality. Y'all have lost 36 games over the last three seasons, the most in the NFL. Haven't won the division since Super Bowl 46, 2011. What I am saying is Joe Judge has heard the critics, and he has altered his style. I love it. I'm glad the players are having fun. I'm glad the players are happy. I'm not so get off my lawn to acknowledge when I see a good thing. But the fun is in winning, and this has no indication or implication of future success. Just a couple ha-has and key-keys.
Oprah doesn't cut your checks anymore either?
Oh my gosh. You know, I was impressed at him, first of all, clinging to the ball. That showed a lot to me that he actually has some athletic ability. That's not easy. If you guys understand how football works and how it's shaped, you go sliding on the ground like that, he could have very easily shown how unathletic he is and how much they didn't need to be listening to what he's saying to them. And that is the first. We are wolves when we are playing. You are looking at a pack of wolves out there telling Joe Judge to go. And you know what Judge had to do right here? What he did right there. You know why? If he fumbles the ball, he fumbles all of that buy-in that he's getting right there. All right? Instead of them patting him and putting water on him and laughing and saying his name, you know what they sitting there doing? They walking away laughing like this dude is a clown.
Lamar, let me get in on this, L.A.
Go ahead, if we're going to be critical,
and again, Giants fans, I've praised you enough, so let me be critical. You're recovering a fumble, and that right there is what you call a city fumble because it's in traffic. A country fumble, you scoop and score. A city fumble, you recover in traffic. Joe Judge's left knee needs to be touching his left elbow so that a defender can't come in and rip the ball away. Again, I wasn't good for much in the NFL, but I knew how to scoop and score a fumble on special teams. Joe Judge, if you're going to demonstrate the drill, you should at least demonstrate the drill completely properly as you are the head coach. You fell into it. The ball could have popped away, but I need that left knee to come up towards that left elbow. I need you to leave no room for somebody to come and scoop the ball away from you. Joe Judge, if you're going to do it, at least do it right. Coming up, Uncle Jimmy will tell us if tonight's game 7 for James Harden or Russell Westbrook. That's next. Yeah. Speak for yourself.
Nobody was even hitting them. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself. Let's talk about the Rockets, who are in a must-win tonight. Yeah, Game 7 at the James Harden. Russell Westbrook had huge turnovers in Game 6. Joined now, finally, by Uncle Jimmy. Oh. Man, great to see you. So, whose legacy is more on the line tonight, Harden or Westbrook?
Remember when y'all, at the beginning of the show, Rick Bucher said, guys, I don't think that's the right question.
Yeah.
What he meant to say was, guys, that's a dumbass question. That's like saying whose legacy is going to suffer more at the end of this show? EO's, Emmanuel Ocho's, or MW's? Marcellus Westbrook, Wilders. See, it's just a dumb question. It's like asking whose brooch game is better. Whose hairline is stronger? Just a dumbass question. It's just remedial. Or as my guy Ocho says, bruh, medial. See, the fact of the matter is, Marcellus Wiley is the Russell Westbrook of this show. All he cares about is padding his own personal stats. That's why he comes out here every day lobbing softball-ass questions to his good friend Triple H, the heavily hydrated hyena, LeVar Arrington. And if you look at it like that, maybe the onus is on Russell Westbrook. Maybe if he loses tonight, maybe his legacy is going to be just like Marcellus Wiley's. It's going to end up with a big-ass question mark at the end of it. Back to you guys.